the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale.
The horror. The horror.
Stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the terrors of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, so if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, hear it you humbly and sincerely. Turn off your radio now.
This is The Horror. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining me this Halloween day for our last Halloween October programming episode thing. We're going to hear two from Quiet Please. We've been listening to Quiet Please all month. I hope you've been enjoying them despite the rough audio every now and again. But we've got two for you today. We're going to start off with Clarissa, an episode that aired April 19th, 1948, to be quickly followed by Don't Tell Me About Halloween, an episode from October 27th. 1947.
Quiet, please. Presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called Clarissa.
No. He was dead before the fire started. I've told you that a dozen times. No, I can't prove it, of course not. You'll just have to believe me. Take my word for it. I can't prove he was dead. You can't prove he wasn't. And anyway, what difference does it make? Now, I'm sorry. I can't hear you very well. Yes. Well, all right. It was an old black shell of a house. A house that has lived too long. A house where the floors groaned in pain at night, where the windows shuddered at the gentlest touch of the wind. Where door latches suddenly gave up their grip and let the night come snipping into the house to paw at your eyes and wake you to the other silences that lay around you. It was never warm there. In the winter, old Hines kept a fire going in the fireplace in the old sitting room, but the logs were scrawny and the draft was bad, and the flames seemed to grudge us their warmth so that we shivered all through the day. We're glad when night came and we could escape to the meager comfort of the drafty bedrooms. And in the summer, there was a dampness about the place. An unhealthy clamminess drifted from the walls and stirred uneasily among the ancient smells of decay that clung to the place. Well, I suppose you could call old Hines a character. You said you didn't know him? An immigrant from the Rhineland sometime in the early 70s. That would make him, let me see, how old?
Ich war im Rhineland geboren. In der Jahrzeit 1862.
That's right, 1862. He was an old man, but he never appeared old. You might have taken him for a vigorous man of 60. His hair and his scraggly mustache were jet black. I suspect he dyed them regularly. And his blue eyes seemed as keen as those of a boy of 18. And he'd never been away from the house for a single night, he used to say, from the day he bought it and moved into it in 1888. And it was an old house then. Yes, I spent some very dreary days and nights in that house. I couldn't afford a better place to live. No, people don't go to live in a haunted house if they can find another place, you know. Well, yes, of course, I'd heard it was haunted before I went there to live. Do you believe in haunted houses? agree, it did look like a haunted house. I've told you about the sounds in the night. I mean, I've told you about some of the sounds in the night. Yes, of course, there were other sounds. Well, please, let me tell it my own way. Well, Clarissa, for instance. Clarissa in particular. Clarissa, above everything else. I had lived there nearly a year. Heinz and I sat that first night alongside the fireplace. I remember he'd asked me to share a bottle of Ben Kustler Doctor with him. We sat in front of the dingy little fire. There was a kerosene lamp on the table, and Heinz in his old black coat with the sleeves that were too short.
You like the wine then, Jesse?
Yeah, very much. Very much.
I have not much left. This is from before the war when it was easier to get, you see. But now, well, it is almost the last.
You shouldn't be so generous with it, Heinz.
Oh, no, no. Good wine always schmeckt besser. When with a friend you drink, nicht wahr? A little more?
Not for a moment, thanks.
Yes, to sit by the fire and look down into the coals and see images of the things past. And drink wine and see the images grow clearer. Ah, it is good in the old age.
You've lived here alone for a long time?
Yeah, a long time. Long, long time. I'm used to it. Used to the lights and the little fire and the silences.
Yes.
It is cold for this time of the year.
Listen.
What's it, Rose?
Oh, I thought I heard someone singing.
So?
Did you hear anything?
It is Clarissa.
What did you say?
Clarissa, my daughter.
Well, I didn't know you had a daughter, Heinz.
Yes. Is there more wine?
No, thanks. I haven't seen her around.
No.
Well, is she... Excuse me, Heinz.
You will forgive me, Jesse. She's a child. I do not wish you to be bothered.
Why, she wouldn't bother me, Heinz. I like children.
There's enough left here in the bottle for one more for each of us, huh?
Thank you, Heinz.
And yes, Schlafwohl.
And I drank the last of the wine with the old man. And then I climbed the creaking stairs to the dreary little room, carrying the kerosene lamp in one hand and casting fabulous shadows on the peeling wallpaper. Seeing the ancient plush-covered rocking chair nodding away at me as I entered the room, as if a startled occupant had suddenly deserted it at the sound of my footsteps on the stairs. And the cold spring rain drenching the window panes. And the murmured complaints of the beams and rafters of the old house. The pleasant, musty fumes of the wine I had drunk kept sleep away for a while when I'd blown out the lamp. The melody of that children's song flowed again across my mind as I lay there. My thoughts wandered to the lonely child that dwelt in the haunted house with the old man and the new-come student. I smiled to myself as I thought, now that settles the question of the house being haunted, doesn't it? People have heard the little girl singing to herself in the night. They've not known that a little girl lived here, too. And that's the ghost. And I smiled again at superstitions. And another idle thought struck me. I wondered at the child's age. 10 or 12 years old by the sound of her voice. And somewhere in the back of my drowsy mind, I seemed to remember that Heinz had told me Helene, his wife, had died... When was it, the year of the San Francisco earthquake? Well, that would be 1906. That would be 42 years ago. And this was a child of 10 or 12. I must have been mistaken. I was very sleepy. Why in the rain? Goodbye. to you. In the morning, Hines was working in his garden, and the early sun made the old house seem a little more cheerful, a little more livable. There was a tinge of green through the gray of the fields that surround the house, and Hines told me he'd seen a robin. I stood and watched him a long time, and I don't think he noticed how my eyes wandered to the windows of the old house, searching for a flash of color that might be a child's hair ribbon, or how I listened for the sound of a young boy singing a little song the children who danced so long ago on the bridges of Avignon. I didn't even notice that I was humming a song under my breath. Shall I call
Dazzle?
What? Oh.
Well, that's Clarissa's song.
That kid used to sing it when I was young.
Yeah, my wife is French. She taught the song to Clarissa.
Oh?
Yeah, it is an old song.
How old is your daughter, Heinz? How old?
Oh, she's young.
Is she pretty?
Oh, yeah. Your breakfast?
Coffee. I found it on the stove.
Clarissa made it.
Oh, did she?
You'd better go to work now,
huh? Yes, I suppose so. You don't need to keep the little girl out of sight on my account, Heinz. I like children.
Oh, she bother you.
Oh, no, I've got a little sister back home.
Oh, yeah?
Miriam. She's 11.
Clarissa is older.
Oh? Miriam's got bright yellow hair.
Clarissa has dark hair.
Yeah, I got a picture of her here.
Oh, so? She's very pretty. I have no picture of Clarissa.
No, that's too bad.
Well, I'll see you tonight, huh?
Yes. Yeah, sure, Hyde. I should have let the thing drop then and there. If the old man felt that children should be kept away from adults, that was his privilege, of course. And although I was often lonely for other company than the old man, I was a dweller in his house, naturally subject to his wishes. My work? No, I never left the place. My book? Well, I was writing a book. No, not very exciting. Mathematics. I have some theories. No, the book is gone. The fire, you remember? I could understand Hines, I thought. He obviously had a great respect for a man's work, especially a work of such apparent erudition. I must not be disturbed. I might stay in my room day and night with my slide rules and my profile paper and my broken flower pot full of sharpened pencils. I was not to be disturbed. But how many times I wished for the happy sound of my little sister Miriam's gay laughter. Found myself listening for the lilt of the little girl song that she used to sing, and that Clarissa knew, too. Hines mentioned Clarissa occasionally.
I sometimes wish that I could have sent Clarissa to school, Jesse.
Well, it's too bad you didn't.
Always there was never enough money.
Why, there are schools. Public schools, Hines.
No, not for Clarissa. It's free schools.
You know, I wonder.
Wonder?
Well, you know, children are supposed to go to school. I'm surprised that the school authorities haven't been to see about sending her.
The police?
Oh, no, not the police. But there are laws about schools. I mean, you might find yourself in trouble if they discover you have a daughter of school age.
They will come here.
Well, if they find out.
Jesse, you will not tell.
Now, look here, Heinz. You're not being fair to the child.
Yes, yes.
No, really, I mean it. Hasn't she ever been to school?
I teach her a little.
Well, Heinz, it's none of my business. But you're doing her a very serious harm.
No, no. Listen, Jesse. You don't tell anybody about her.
Well, I don't know, Heinz. If they come and ask me...
Jesse, listen. I tell you something.
Well?
Clarissa can't go to school.
Well, why not? I told you it doesn't cost anything.
It is not that.
Well, then?
She's not well.
Oh, I'm sorry, Hines. Look, would you like it if I gave her a little of my time and taught her some of the elementary...
No, please, don't.
Well, I'd be glad to.
No.
Well, have it your way, Hines. I don't mean to intrude on your affairs, but after all, a child...
I'm sorry, Jesse. I thank you, but... no.
All right. Forget it. But I couldn't forget it. A kindly old man. Yes, he was kindly. And a sick child who had never seen the inside of a schoolroom who was growing up to become... what? In an ancient, moldering house. A house that had lived too long. Alone with a father born 86 years ago. Alone at night in the darkness with the house grumbling and complaining around me. I thought about the plight of the child. Sometimes I could hear her song far away somewhere in the dank recesses of that crumbling house. And my thoughts revolved again about this mystery. Heinz said she was not well. Heinz would not allow her to appear. Was Clarissa some misshapen monster child that she must be pent up and never see the sun? Was she... I detest mysteries of that kind. I love the good, clean mysteries of abscissa and ordinate, the logarithm and antilogarithm of the calculus and the grand old theorems devised by the ancients. But the fascinating mysteries of the human mind and of human behavior are alien to me. Them I hate. And my thoughts crept further and further away from the 10 numbers as doubt and speculation about the child laid hold of my mind. In the night, how often I heard her sobs, I thought, sometimes close outside my door. And yet when I opened the door, there was nothing. And old Heinz grew more and more taciturn. He never spoke of his daughter. He seemed to avoid me by day and to disappear by night. But the summer came then, and the fall, and winter. My book was going badly, and my thoughts wandered. I must leave this place, I thought, to find out this mystery. And again I asked the old man if there was not something I might do for this pathetic child, this invisible, haunting voice.
No, Jesse. There is nothing you could do.
But Christmas is coming, Heinz. What can I get her for Christmas?
No, why not, Jesse?
What?
My Helene. She died on the eve of Christmas.
Well, but Heinz, you owe it to the child.
No. Let us not speak of it again.
But to me, the thought of Christmas passing by this child was unspeakable. I determined that if the old man would do nothing about it, I would. You know, I had little money, and there was so little I could do. But I did come into the town here, and I found a toy for her. I found one I could afford. A little woolly lamb. A little woolly white lamb with black buttons for eyes and a blue silk ribbon about its neck and a gay little blue flower in its mouth. I hung a little card about its neck that said, "Merry Christmas to Clarissa." And on Christmas Eve, Heinz and I shared the last bottle of Ben Kostler Doctor before the miserly little fire. And I gave him one of the handkerchiefs my little sister Miriam had sent me, and he gave me an old stone krug with a heavy pewter top that he said came from Heidelberg. And we regretted that there was no creamy Pilsner Urquell to drink from it. Wished each other a happy Christmas. And then, in the night, I was awakened by a tiny sound. And I lay awake silently for a moment. And there was another sound. A hesitant little footstep. And a rustling at the dresser across the room from me. And I lay quietly and listened. Is that you, Clarissa? Is that you, Clarissa? Do you like it? Good. happy Christmas. I'm sorry, that's all I could get you. But I hope you like it. And I felt the touch of a tiny hand on my shoulder, and lips brushed my cheek, and the door closed. And the sound of her voice in the little song was happier now than I'd ever heard it.
That is good. You're a kind person, Jesse.
I wish it could have been more.
Oh, it is a very rich gift. Never has she had such a thing.
Is she going to have Christmas dinner with us, Heinz?
No.
So, I had won a little victory in this conflict with the darkness. But I was to go no further. I asked Heinz about her. Heinz answered shortly. I suggested that a birthday gift might be in order if I only knew her birthday. I proposed writing my own sister and begging her for outworn storybooks that Clarissa might read, even if she must stay aloof from the rest of the house. Heinz did not reply. Everything was as it had always been, so long as the name of Clarissa was not mentioned. But when I came in the late spring, when it was cold and windy again, and the raw snow pelted against the windows and the whole house shivered, I heard her crying again in the night. And there was a quality in her voice this time that brought me out of the bed and into the hall. I called in alarm. Clarissa! I stepped back into my room and lit the kerosene lamp. And as I stepped out again toward the hallway, Heinz confronted me.
What's my auntie, Jesse?
Why, can't you hear her, Heinz? Something's wrong, she's sick.
No, go back by your room, Jesse.
Oh, but Heinz.
Don't be there, Jesse. Go back.
Now, Heinz, listen to me. Something's awfully wrong with that child, and
I will take care of her, Jesse. Please, Heinz.
In your room. Now, see here, I
take care of my own man, huh? Heinz.
In my
I reached for the door at once, but it was locked from the outside. And I beat on it and stormed at it in the cold. But for once it held. I screamed at the father, threatening every kind of vengeance on him, till at last I suddenly realized that I was being hysterically silly. In the silence, I could hear nothing but the moan of the wind around the rusty cornices of the house and the hiss of snowflakes against the window. I sat down, shaken, bitter at myself for giving way to such an outburst over a child's crying in the night. And at last I lay down again. And in the frosty silence of the early dawn, I fell asleep. And when I awoke hours later and found my door unlocked again, Heinz was not to be found. Not that day, nor the next. I tramped through the house, opening doors, calling him, calling Clarissa. There was not a sound to answer me. I found a little wood and made a miserable fire. I suppose I ate. I don't remember any too well. And at night I went to bed, till I, shivering for hours, straining my ears for a sound. The sound of a child's song. The sound of a father's footstep in the cold darkness. Then, it was morning, nearly morning. Gray fingers of morning plucking at the frost-rimed windows. And I awoke to see Hines standing beside my bed. In the 2 days, he seemed to have aged 20 years. He was an old, old man. He spoke to me.
Jesse, my friend.
What's the matter, Hines?
No, much matter, Jesse. I am dying.
Why, Hines!
It is finished now, Jesse. Unless it's horrible.
Sit down.
No, no. Hear me. See, the key to Clarissa's room. You take it.
Oh, is she all right? Hines!
Too late for me now. Go. Clarissa's room. Do what is to be done.
I lifted him to the bed. I bent over him. I listened for his heart. There was no sound. Hines was dead. Yes, just as I told you before, he died. He died there in my room, yes. What? Oh, yes. In the little half-light, I found the kerosene lamp and I lit it. I took the key from the floor where he dropped it. No. I found the room very easily. It was at the far end of the hall. I called. Clarissa? And there was no answer, so I unlocked the door. And holding the light above my head, I walked over to the bed. And there, lying on the bed, dressed in a pinafore that might have come out of the 10-year-old drawing in Alice in Wonderland, clutching a little woolly lamb to her breast, there lay a tiny, old woman with long white hair braided into pigtails. Clarissa. And I knew why I hadn't heard the little song for 2 days. And so when the lamp dropped out of my hand and the flames started licking around the dry as dust draperies and the fragile old oaken boards on the floor, I turned and went out of the house. Well, what else was there to do? The house had lived too long. And so had the father and daughter who dwelt there.
System presents Quiet, Please. It is written and directed by Willis Cooper and features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called Don't Tell Me About Halloween. I'm going to kill my wife tonight, or maybe tomorrow night. I mean, I'm going to kill one of my wives. I better, or something's going to happen to me that won't be good. Well, Halloween's almost here. Halloween's the deadline. And
Candace has to be dead before Halloween. Only trouble is, I'm not sure I'll recognize her when she shows up. You ever been in Salem, Massachusetts? Place where they hanged all the witches? No, they didn't burn them at the stake. A lot of people think so, but they didn't. They hanged them. All except the man witch, old Giles Corey. They pressed him to death. Very unpleasant. Well, it was in Salem this particular Halloween that I met Candace. It was dark up there on the hill where the gallows used to stand. Dark and cold with a damp wind coming in off the sea. A few little lights you could see in the dusk only made it darker and lonelier and creepier up there. I remember how I shivered as I started down the hill to town. And I remember how I jumped when something that looked like a black cat jumped out of the shadows at my feet. Without thinking, I yelled, "Who's that?" My heart almost stopped beating because...
Well, good evening.
I'd been all alone up there. And then, all of a sudden, there was a woman standing beside me.
You're the first human being that's spoken to me tonight.
Who are you?
I'm Candace.
I don't know any Candace.
You didn't, but you do now.
You nearly scared me to death.
Oh, I wouldn't do that to you. What's your name?
Craig.
You like me, Craig?
What? Well, I don't know what you look like.
I like you very much.
Well, but I...
Kiss me, Craig.
Now...
Kiss me, I think. You know, you're going to be a very nice husband for me, Craig.
What do you mean? I'm not going to...
Oh, yes, you are. When I say something's going to happen, it happens, Craig.
But I... I'm not...
Wouldn't you like to be rich, Craig, and have a beautiful wife? I am beautiful. You'll see. Wouldn't you like to be rich and wise and happy and live forever? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you, Craig?
Who the devil are you?
Why, that's a very apt way of putting it, Craig.
Who are you?
I'm Candace.
That doesn't mean anything to me.
I'm the witch they didn't hang, Craig.
Well, she was right. I am rich. Whenever I need money, which hasn't been for a long time now, I ask Candace when she comes to see me at Halloween time. I am reasonably wise, I suppose. I'm quite an authority on American history, quite well considered at the university here. And while I can't say I've lived forever, I have lived 253 years. Now, that's right. You see, I met Candace on the hill above Salem in the year 1694, 2 years after Cotton Mather stopped hanging witches. Yes, Candace has kept her promise. I remember the way she put it, standing up there in the early morning, watching the mists crawling along the ground below us.
You'll not see me now till another Halloween. And I can't tell you what form I'll be in when I come to see you again. But if you see a strange bird or a lost dog or any strange being at your door come Halloween, you say, "Who's that?" And if it so happens the stranger's me, why then I'll be home with you till the cock crows for morning.
And I remember I started to speak, to ask questions, but she stopped me.
For the time's short now, my love. And remember the words, and we've all the future before us. As long as I live, you shall live.
And below us somewhere a rooster crowed. And I was standing alone on the hill. And a yellow butterfly was rising in circles above my head. I watched it disappear into the first rays of the sun. No, I didn't believe it either. And yet, we were only 2 years away from the witchcraft trials, and whatever may be said today, the belief in witches didn't die as quick a death as modern historians would have you believe. I was there. I know. Besides, I had married a witch. Halloween, 1695, a stray dog lay on my doorstep, shivering in the rain. I don't like dogs. I was about to boot the animal into the street when I caught a look in its eyes. I yelled, "Who's that?"
Well, it's about time. I've been lying here on that doorstep, freezing and nearly drowned without a stitch on, and you stand there and look at me like some great fool. Get me something to put around me and stir up the fire before I take my death of cold. And I do believe you were going to kick me, too. What
did I ever say to you? Candace, dear, how was I to know?
Give me that quilt!
Oh. She was all contriteness and apologies in a moment. But I can feel that slap alongside my chops from 2.5 centuries ago. And our first anniversary was a very pleasant one. I was rather glad I'd married a witch. It had its drawbacks, though. Despite wealth and growing wisdom, people around me in Salem grew old, and I seemed to stay the same age. I moved away, and the years went on. I moved away from Salem, and I moved away from Philadelphia, and I moved from Baltimore and Richmond and Savannah and a score of other places. I spoke to George Washington. And I watched Robert Fulton's steamboat chug up the Hudson when I was more than 100 years old. And looked 35. And every Halloween I welcomed Candace home for a night. One year in a farmhouse on an Illinois prairie, a red fox whined at my door. And it was Candace. One year a blue jay flew down from a tree in Missouri. And another year, she came as a skittering little gray field mouse. And the year I came back to Wisconsin after the Civil War, a porcupine gnawed its way into my cabin on Halloween night, and one of its quills spiked me before I thought to say, "Who's that?" And when Candace smiled at me, there was only a strand of yellow hair through the thick of my thumb. I remember she pulled it out. And it hurt. Years and years and years. Yeah, she's been a wonderful wife, but I never forget what she is. Once a year is getting to be enough. It was just 67 years ago tonight, before Halloween, you see. That was the first time she appeared before Halloween, 1880. Rutherford B. Hayes was still president then. Yeah, it seems like yesterday. I heard something bumping against the front door, and before I thought, I called out, "Who's that?"
You were never going to call me.
Darling, I didn't know it was you.
Well?
Huh?
Don't people kiss their wives anymore?
Darling, you surprised me.
Suppose you surprised me. Well?
How come you're so early, dear?
Oh, I just thought it would be nice to surprise you.
You certainly did surprise me.
Did I?
You certainly did.
Since last year?
Why, nothing much.
That's so.
And what have you been doing?
I've been away.
Where?
Craig, you'll be better off if you don't inquire too closely into my private affairs. Being married to a witch ought to be enough for you.
I'm just interested, Candace.
Like I'm interested in what you do when I'm away.
What?
I am interested, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about, dear.
You don't?
No.
Don't you ever get lonely while I'm away?
What? Why, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about, Craig.
I don't either.
You forgetting that I'm a witch, dear?
What?
You can't keep anything from me, Craig. Don't you know that?
Why?
Oh, I won't punish you, Craig. But you mustn't run around with red-haired girls.
Well, I don't know what you're...
Oh, yes, you do. So I just decided to take that temptation away from you.
Candace, what did you...
Look over there at the window, darling.
And I looked. And peering in the window out of the darkness was a frightened, tiny red squirrel, its teeth chattering with terror and cold.
She's still got her red hair, dear.
Candace, did you do that to her?
Dear. No, don't try to rescue her, Craig. I've got other plans for your little girlfriend.
What are you going to...
Listen. Now come here and kiss me. Good.
Yes, in some ways it's fine. In some ways. You know, in the last 50, 60 years, I've gotten so I'm afraid to say who's that anytime. Wait a second. Did you hear anything? No, I guess she's not here. I wouldn't want her to surprise me again. I want to surprise her. It's 67 years ago that she set the wheels on that poor little red squirrel. It was once Marjorie... I've forgotten her last name. But I haven't forgotten what she did to me. They arrested me for murder. Candace let me stay in jail a whole year. I waited till the next Halloween, 1881, till a little screech owl came and perched on the window ledge of my cell. Even then, it took me half an hour to remember to say, "Who's that?" Oh, sure, yes, she was very sorry, she said. Very sorry, but I had to be punished for being unfaithful to her. Unfaithful? I never even kissed Marjorie. That witch. Believe me, I was pretty careful after I got out of there and moved to Oklahoma. If I had any female acquaintances, I stopped seeing them along in early September. But, Donald, how would you like it if you only saw your wife once a year? And if you knew she could turn you into a caterpillar or a hippopotamus or something whenever she got miffed with you? You'd look around, too, just like I did. She nearly caught me again in Washington, D.C. That was in 1910. I'd been a good boy for nearly 50 years. Well, pretty good, or at least careful. I was standing outside the door of the Willard Hotel that Halloween night. A big moth dropped out of the darkness and lit on my shoulder. Candace likes to be a moth, I think. She appeared that way 15 to 20 times. Well, I knew at once what it was. My conscience was reasonably clear, so I just said, "Who's that?"
"Hello, darling."
"Welcome back, Candace, dear."
"Been a good boy."
"Perfect, darling."
"Love, Candace."
"Mad about Candace."
"You better be."
"Now, Candace."
"You living here now? In the hotel?"
I hope you like it."
"I've never been in Washington before."
"Well, we'll go sightseeing tomorrow."
"Oh, I saw quite a lot of it. Flying in."
"Yes?"
"Who's that woman?"
"What woman?"
"Why, Craig, darling, where on earth have you been?"
"Yes, I thought Gertrude was in Chicago where I'd left her. Wasn't that just my luck? I don't know what Candace did to her. She just disappeared. But you know what that witch did to me? She turned me into a fire alarm box. Yeah, don't laugh. It isn't funny. From October 31st, 1910, till October 31st, 1911, I stood there in front of the Willard Hotel, rain and shine, snow and boiling hot weather. And nobody even turned in an alarm on me. Of course, they... did paint me in the spring. Then at 11:30 on Halloween, a little black dog came by. I tried to say, "Who's that?" And I made it all right because I could hear gears clicking and wheels turning. And there we were, Candace in a black fur coat and me in a blue serge suit all plastered with red paint. How do you think I feel? Oh, my feet.
Well, now maybe you won't be chasing other women, my dear.
Candace, I promise I'll never do it again.
You better not, sweetheart. I'm a very jealous woman.
So I noticed.
And if you think that was bad, how would you like to...
No, Candace, please. No, no. Don't tell me.
You may kiss me now. Oh. And don't get paint all over my coat.
Candace can be very sweet when she wants to be. But these last 30 years, she doesn't seem to want to be very much. She spends most of the time she's here asking me questions about what I've been doing, where I've been, the people I've seen. And friend, I'm getting awful tired of it. 253 years is a long time. A long, long time with a jealous wife. So I'm going to get rid of her. This time I'm done. No, I don't love Candace anymore. I'm afraid of her. I told you I got this job here at the university in the history department. I've got this little cottage up here in the hills where I go every Halloween. Well, I don't want Candace barging in on faculty row. Well, I'm not supposed to be married here. And you know faculty people. So, well, I've decided to end it all this year. I'm going to kill Candace. But that is, I hope I am. When she appears, I'm not going to say who's that. I'm going to kill her. And then Alicia and I are going to be married. Oh, I didn't tell you about Alicia. Here comes Alicia now. I'd like to have you meet her. This is Alicia.
How do you do?
Alicia and I are going to be married.
Yes, indeed. Right after Halloween.
Alicia, secretary to the Dean of Women.
Well, that's how I met Craig.
Well, I hope you don't mean to imply I was flirting with the Dean, Alicia.
Oh, goodness, no, dear. I mean, you were being introduced to her when we first saw each other.
Oh, darling. I'll never forget it.
Oh, I won't either.
Isn't she pretty?
Oh, Craig, you mustn't talk that way to strangers.
Well, I'm sorry, dear, but you are pretty.
But I'm so much younger than you are, Craig.
Well, you are a little younger, dear, but that won't make any difference, will it?
Oh, not to me, darling.
Excuse us a second. Darling, I love you.
Oh, darling, I love you.
Yes.
Oh, but they're looking, sweetheart.
Shut your eyes a second, will you, please? Now, darling. You like her? Quite a girl, isn't she? Nothing at all like Candace. Man, am I tired of Candace. Wait a second, the phone's ringing. I'll be right with you. Hello?
Hello, darling, this is Alicia.
Hello, dear.
Are you going up to the cabin today?
I'm just leaving, darling.
Oh, I wish I could go with you.
Well, I do too, but I'll be back in a day or so.
Couldn't I, please?
No, dear, no. You know it can't be done. Well, it isn't practicable, dear. I'll hurry back.
I could drive up tomorrow.
I'll probably be back tomorrow.
I'll miss you.
I'll miss you.
I just wanted to say goodbye.
I love you.
I love you.
See you in a day or so, honey.
All right. But I wish I could go along.
It can't be done, sweet.
I might drive up and surprise
you. No, don't do that. Alicia, wait. Oh, my gosh, she can't do that if she doesn't. Hello. Hello. Get me 3412J. Well, so here I am. I wish I could have got Alicia back on that phone. If she comes up here, she'll... Oh, well, she won't. She's got better sense. Yeah, let's see, what time is it? Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. Revolver with a silver bullet. The old Revolutionary War bayonet I had at Valley Forge. A Bowie knife Dave Crockett gave me. And I'm pretty well fixed. Come on, Candace, honey. Come on. Yes, come on in. This time you can come ahead of time, baby, and Papa will be waiting for you. And then, Alicia. She's an owl or something this time. Wait a minute. Oh, if she's an owl, I better get that shotgun out. Now, Candace. Out. What the dickens was that? Oh, a moth. A moth, eh? Well, Candace. Here, where's that Saturday Evening Post? Light somewhere, darling. Light. There. Oh, mister, you're not going to get away this time, sweetheart. Get away from that lamp. Get away, I say. Yeah, I got you. Oh, you're not dead yet. Well, I'll...
Never mind, Craig.
What?
Never mind. I'm going to die, all right.
Who's that?
It's too late, Craig. You've killed me. But haven't you forgotten something, darling?
What did I forget?
You forgot what I told you back there on the hill at Salem, sweetheart. You'll live just as long as I live. And when I die, you'll die.
Oh. Candace, let me help you.
It's too late, darling. Much, much too late.
Hello. Hello, this is Forest Ranger Station. Oh, hello, Brad. Oh, this is Joe Thomas. Listen, Brad, you better call the county cops or somebody. Well, I don't know. Well, I'm at the little cabin halfway up Latigo Canyon. You know, the one with the red shutters? Yeah, well, I was on my way up to the station, see, and I meet this girl. Please be quiet, will you, lady? This girl and her car's busted down. Well, I picked her up, and she wants to come up here. What's your name, lady?
Alicia Dean.
So she's going to meet this fella here, she says, and I left her out, and I was just starting away, and I hear her scream. Scream, you know, holler. So I stop and run inside, and she yelled her head off. Lady, please. Yeah. I don't know, Brad. It sure looked awful strange. No, there wasn't no guy here. No. Nothing but a squashed moth, one of them big death's head moths, you know, and a skeleton. Yeah, a skeleton. All dried up and dusty. Like it was maybe 250 years old. And that's all. Just him and the moth. Funny, ain't it?
Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who talked to you was Ernest Chappell.
Angelita Bauer played Candace. Alicia was Peggy Stanley, and the forest ranger was Jim Bowles. The music for Quiet, Please is composed and played by Gene Perazzo, except, of course, for our theme, which, in answer to many queries, is based on the second movement of the Symphony in D minor by César Franck. Now, for a word about next week's Quiet, Please, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Take me out to the graveyard. That's the title I've got for next week's story. Come along for the ride, won't you?
And so, until next week at this time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet, Please comes to you from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Going to do it for the horror for today. I'll be back Wednesday with another horror replay. We'll resume those now. RelicRadio.com has more old-time radio every day for you, and links to our forum, listener community, lives, shoutcast stream, and everything else. You can find all that at RelicRadio.com. All our October programming will be listed up at RelicRadio.com/Halloween. I'll be leaving that site up and hopefully adding more to it. Wasn't able to make it the site I wanted it to be, but I'm out of time, so I'm going to keep working at it, and hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with a horror replay, and the following Saturday with a brand new episode of The Horror. Happy Halloween, everyone.